Obacht, die heutige Folge ist auf Englisch. Attention, today's episode is in English. Enjoy. Hello, dear friends, and welcome to episode 78 of the Veggie World podcast. I'm Lars, and I'm here every Monday to feed you a healthy spoonful of tips and interviews concerning the vegan lifestyle. And today I'm talking to journalist Jessica Elscott-Reed about advocacy journalism. Thanks for tuning in, folks. It has been quite some time since we last released an English episode in this podcast. Almost a year ago exactly, it was that we released the amazing Dr. Melanie Joy interview. And since then, we dabbled a bit in the international game with the Veggie World International podcast. We released, I think, 7 episodes last summer and last fall. But we thought, you know, the international vegan podcast scene has quite a bit of great podcasts. And so let's just sprinkle a bit of English in the German one whenever we like, because you seemed to like it, quite frankly. And sorry, people, if you're not into English that much, that is absolutely fine. Maybe this is a nice addition to your New Year's resolutions to improve your English, like Fleur de la Cour, Harry Potter fans will understand, or just skip to the next week's episode as soon as that gets out. I wouldn't recommend skipping, though, because today's talk with Canadian writer Jessica Elscott-Reed is jam-packed with a unique perspective on animal rights, a very international one, and also a mother's perspective. So keep your eyes peeled, or your ears peeled, so to speak. Also, sorry, there's no subtitles. This is a podcast, after all. Sorry, YouTube fans. A little disclaimer, by the way. I'm sorry my accent's jumping around again. I have been spending most of last week with American director James Hoot, so American it was for me as well. But since I've been almost cyber-bullied by some of my lovely Instagram fans, why my crude distortion of a British accent is gone, I feel obliged to go back to that. I did not do that for the interview. I am sorry for that, but maybe I will do my British from now on as well. I need to get back with a couple of British friends anyhow. So feel free to feel confused or annoyed, but also feel free to get a nice drink and enjoy the interview with Jessica Elscott-Reed. I'm sitting here with Jessica, and we're on the Veggie World Düsseldorf. It's quite lovely. It's very full.
Very busy.
It's a great event. Yeah, Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
For the people who don't know you, who are you? What do you do?
I am a writer, originally from Canada. I now live here in Germany. I cover animal rights and welfare, as well as a lot of plant-based food topics for major media, mostly in North America, Canada, and the US.
Wow. So how come you don't live in Canada anymore? What drew you around the world?
I live in Canada for some part of each year, but for most of the year, I'm over here in Europe. I've been here for about 11 years, different places in Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, Russia, because my husband is a hockey player, now coach. So I am a hockey wife slash animal activist and writer.
Or you're animal activist and writer slash hockey wife.
Yes, depends on the day, I suppose.
Okay. Cool, wow. So what came first, like your writing and activism or the traveling around?
The hockey life came first, okay. And it gave me the opportunity to kind of get out of the traditional working world, and it allowed me to do a master's degree online while I was following my husband around, and that is what evolved into the writing and eventually into the activism.
Yeah, I guess you have to find something that you're passionate about when you're just running around the world.
A job that you can take with you. And definitely this is something as a writer and an activist that is needed and capable of doing wherever I am.
Right. Not sitting in hotel rooms watching Netflix all the time.
That's right. Can't do that.
Yeah. So what drew you to exactly that? I mean, you could have done, I don't know, excessive shopping or anything. What drew you to not only writing, but writing for this topic? What
makes you passionate about animal activism?
Yeah, it was quite a journey. I kind of started writing about excessive shopping and basically anything I could write about, because when you're a novice writer, that's what you do.
Right.
And because I was living overseas, I did a lot of travel writing, and that also included a lot of food writing.
Right.
And my journey as a food writer and a cultural scientist, I'd like to think, went alongside my journey of becoming vegan. And so as that happened, it actually was a great time to start writing about animal issues in the media. This was about 2 years ago when suddenly editors really cared about animal issues, and animal issues were making headlines, and plant-based food topics were making headlines. And so I was able to jump on that niche on a personal side and on a professional side at, I think, the exact right time.
So what was for you like the button that had to be pushed? I mean, did you read about it from other editors or other writers, or did you come to the topic like from another side? Did you read about it on the news?
I really started again as a food writer, and I was working with Vice at the time.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of writing about, ironically, humane slaughter, organic food, organic meats, things like that. I think as a way to try and find a way to make this feel right with me. I had been an on and off again vegetarian myself throughout all my 20s. And so I was trying to find a way to make this okay. When I moved to Germany in particular, I found that this draw towards organic food was so big. It was trendy here before it was trendy anywhere else, I think. And the farm to table idea. And so that really started getting me thinking about where my food came from. And then the real catalyst was having my daughter. After I gave birth to my daughter just over 2 years ago, I felt like I really needed to get my values in order in order to know how to raise her properly. And the moment came when I had to start her on solid food, and I realized I can't feed her animals. And this went along with my writing, and I started writing about raising a vegan child, and that spun into writing all things vegan and animal rights.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's an interesting point. I think, you know, responsibility, increase in responsibility as a parent.
Big time.
It's a very interesting point to switch, to rethink your life, really. How was your change received? I mean, especially raising a vegan child is still so controversial.
Yes.
How was that for you?
It's still an ongoing challenge. I think a good part, or maybe I'm copping out a little, is that I'm living far away from sort of my family and friends at home.
Oh, okay.
So I get to live in a bit of a bubble here and surround myself with, vegan people as I choose, sort of get to start over every time my husband gets a new job. So that's easy. I think because I have this great outlet as a writer, I wrote an article for Today's Parent, a big parenting magazine in Canada, about my thoughts on raising a vegan child, particularly in a very omnivorous world, and sort of the challenges that I face or that I expect to face and how I think I'm going to handle them. So I was able to just kind of hand that article out into the world.
Like a diary.
Yes, and whoever needs
everyone.
To see it. Exactly. Yeah. Whoever needs to see it. I think I avoided a lot of awkward conversations by just writing that essay and putting it out there for whomever needed it.
Right. Perfect. Wow, that's great. I don't want to have all these conversations. I just gotta write.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And you know what? If you can get paid a little bit to do that, then it's a win-win.
Absolutely. I'm really interested in your lifestyle, apart from the veganism, but traveling around all the time and just having to reconnect all the time. I don't know, are most of your friendships like online now?
Yeah,
to stay in touch, or do you make new friends all the time? I don't know.
It's a weird life that way, and I think actually becoming vegan helped a little bit, because I've been doing this for many years as a hockey wife. We hang out with hockey wives from North America, and as well as, local German or Danish or whomever. And then you have to leave them every couple of years. And I think that becoming vegan is great, because I have a community waiting for me. every place I go, especially here in Europe, especially here in Germany. The minute I arrive, you know, I start getting involved with Anonymous for the Voiceless, I do a couple cubes of truth, and I meet people. And so this has really helped this sort of traveling expat lifestyle, is having this community to reach out to in every city I end up in.
Right. Wow. So how many countries have you been in over the last couple of years?
Yeah. So Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, Russia. So four.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we go back to Canada every summer for a couple months.
What interests me as a language file, I don't know the English word for that. Do you try to get a bit into the culture and the language of the country that you live in?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, because I know a couple of Americans, a couple of British people who are, I mean, I know a couple of Brits who live in Cologne and they speak perfect German. And I know a couple of Americans who live here, have been living here for 20 years and they're like, I don't care. All the Germans speak English. I don't care.
I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle of that.
Okay.
I think if I had spent this entire time in one country, it would have probably been a bit easier. But I spent my first 3 years here in Dusseldorf, actually, at the very beginning.
Right.
My husband played for the Dusseldorf hockey team. And I picked up a lot of German then. But then we went to Switzerland. And so that's a whole nother type of German.
Yes.
And so then I got really screwed up. And then we went to Hamburg. That's a whole nother type of German.
Yeah.
And then it was off to Russia. So then everything got screwed up. But I really try, and I find German actually easier than French, coming from a French part of Canada.
Right.
I never picked it up. German's easier.
I think French grammar is just the hardest. I don't know.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find German enough like English that it makes sense to me.
Okay. Once you get a grip of German, you have to try Dutch, because Dutch, I'm learning Dutch at the moment, and Spanish and French. And Dutch is like the perfect mix of German and English.
I see that on menus.
Yeah, because it's got like the German grammar.
Yes.
But a lot of words are just English words, but written differently.
Yes.
Like owl is owl, but U-I-L.
So interesting.
Owl. And you think, okay, well, that's cool.
That's
so knowing English, learning Dutch is a big plus.
Okay, well, I'll have to give that a try.
If you land in the Netherlands.
Could happen.
So did you, how was the choice to travel with your husband? How did that come to be? I mean, it's a big choice to travel, to leave family and friends behind and travel around the world.
Yeah, it was, it wasn't really a choice I made knowing the whole picture that would unfold before me. Him and I were young. We met in Canada and he signed the contract to come to Dusseldorf. We'd only been dating for a few months. I was young. My mom told me to go. She said, you're done school. You can quit your job and come back and get another one. You don't have a kid. Just go and see what happens. And so I went, and here we are 11 years later, married with a child and just loving it.
Great mom.
Yeah, she did the right thing. Thanks, Mom.
Fantastic. So you started writing.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become a professional writer? I mean, getting to work for Vice magazine is great.
Yeah, that was a great, probably one of my first biggest ins. I did a lot of kind of copywriting and stuff at first, where I was writing for travel publications and stuff, just based because I was in these different places.
Right.
I was in Zurich at the time and I was an English writer. So that gave me an in on that. And it just kind of progressed as my interests in life progressed. You write what you know. And so I was just writing whatever I could about what I was experiencing in my life. And that's basically what I'm still doing now as a writer about animal rights and vegan issues, because this is the world I'm now in, even here in Germany. I write mostly about Canadian issues because I still have, you know, one foot there. I still watch Canadian news every morning.
Okay. So you're still in contact and in touch with the news there, because
yes,
I imagine
that's what I write for.
It's a little harder to stay in touch when you're not there, when you're halfway around
the world. Thankfully, I mean, technology evolved along with my career, so that worked great. Things like social media and stuff was also evolving over the last 10 years in a way that allowed me to do this job. So now I'm writing about, you know, issues as they happen in Canada or in the US. I just published a piece yesterday in the New York Daily News. I'm not in New York. I'm not in the States. I've never been to New York, but I can write for them and write honestly and informatively because all the information is there.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
So what's your focus now? How can you apply your ethics and the activism with your writing? I imagine it's more mainstream to write about vegan stuff now.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know how to apply it all the time, because mean, we have this today here. We have a lot of TV here today because there was this IPCC report by the UN, I think, a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
And now everybody's like, oh, climate change.
It's huge.
Yes. And suddenly the climate is changing.
So this gives me, someone like me, an amazing opportunity because when something like that comes out, I can, for lack of a better term, milk it.
Right.
I can write parenting articles about how to swap in plant-based proteins in your kids' meals a couple times a week, you know, and then the one I just wrote for the New York Daily News yesterday about their Donald Trump's move to increase speeds at which chickens are slaughtered.
Yes.
So, you know, I can talk about the climate reports in that regard too. The title is "The Last Thing We Need: More Dead Chickens." So I can take these opportunities when these sort of studies comes out, and so it's not just about vegan issues; it's about climate issues and about animal issues. There's things coming out about animals all the time.
Right.
Good stories, bad stories. I started off writing mostly about dogs, about dog issues, because that's what kind of people cared more about, say, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that has evolved as I have evolved out of animal welfare conversations into animal rights conversations. So there's always something to write and always an editor willing to give me a chance for the most part. It's pretty amazing.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how has the US-American politics concerning climate, how has that affected Canada?
I think a lot of Canadians imagine that things are different where we are. And a lot of my job as a writer and just as a person communicating with other Canadians is to let them know that things really aren't that different in Canada. Also with the way that we produce meat, a lot of Canadians would believe that we're extra humane for some reason because we're such nice people. And yet they don't understand that really our systems are pretty much exactly the same. So there was an issue with the new trade deal between Canada and the US that's now going to allow American dairy into Canada. Canadians got all crazy saying we don't want growth hormones in our milk because that's they're allowed in the US, they're not allowed in Canada because of animal welfare issues.
Right.
And so everyone, oh, I'm only buying Canadian milk. So I wrote an article for the National Observer, an independent publication, saying Canadian dairy is not that much better, and let me tell you why.
Right.
Detailing how inhumane dairy is on its own, whether it's from America or the States.
I imagine you have to do a lot of research. I mean, doing all these health-based articles.
Health, environment, animal welfare, animal rights. It's a whole, you could be writing about a lot of different things on one of the same subjects.
I'm not obviously not a journalist and I'm not a scientist, so I'm really interested in how can we do time-effective and efficient research if we want to research like vegan issues, climate issues. How do you do that? What are the best addresses that we can find, and how do you do research basically?
Yeah, I get a lot of my inspiration from The Guardian. I think that the stuff that they're doing on environment and animal welfare is incredible. They are for some reason able to say things that other papers aren't, you know, having the nerve to say.
Yeah,
and their reporters and their writers do so much incredible research. So I get a lot of my inspiration from there. And then I'll talk to people. I talk to a lot of professionals. There is a professor in Canada at a university there who's a food professor, he's called. And his name is Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, and he talks a lot about these different food issues in Canada, and I'll often talk with him about what he thinks about the future, say, of plant-based meats,
right.
Meat alternatives in Canada. So I'll talk to professionals. And then, of course, always the studies. There's always scholarly study that you have to go through. And sometimes it's difficult when you're not a scientist to go through these studies, but that's really where a lot of the information comes from. And you gotta be able to figure those out.
So it's kind of a lot of networking, knowing the right people to ask.
Yes, the right people to ask and the right places on the internet to search. Because, of course, we all know there's so much crap out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So to get your sources straight and making sure that you're getting things. Because the last thing you want to do as a vegan writer is put something hyperbolic out there.
Yeah, you need to be bulletproof.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I really pride myself being a writer of this sort of subject matter. I'm not associated with any animal rights groups. And they're often blamed for being sensationalist.
Right.
And
right.
So I try very hard not to do that. I want to be very factual. My work is opinion writing for the most part, but it has to be like you say, bulletproof.
Yeah, and as neutral as possible. Just
I can have an opinion. I can have an opinion because I'm not a reporter, so okay. I'm allowed to have an opinion. That's what I do is opinion writing. But I can't be dramatic, and I can't right. I can't exaggerate. And that's right. the worst thing as a vegan writer we could do.
Yeah, and I mean you depend on this more than anybody else writing because you're a professional, so you need to live on that. Right?
Yes, and if I do something wrong, if I put a fact out there that's wrong, you know there are a lot of people out there waiting to jump on any error I can make in order right. to, you know, dissuade people from my message. And there's right. a lot of meat eaters out there super defensive about stuff that I write.
Right.
So if I get anything wrong, they're going to be all over it.
Do you get a lot of hate? I mean, does it reach you directly?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, because I'm very active on social media.
Right.
So this opens me up to a lot of haters and trolls and a lot of defensive meat eaters.
Right.
And they come at me. And sometimes I get too involved in defending my message. And a lot of people will say, just don't read the comments.
I think handling social media has become a very crucial part of of handling activism and our personal lives, because I think we are so vulnerable now because we put up so much personal stuff of us out there. And I think a lot of people can't really handle it, or we get too active, or we get enthusiastic because we want X many followers or something. And whenever I talk to people, they're like, oh, I only have 2,000 followers. I mean, put all those people in one room.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot of people listening to you.
Yes.
And especially if it's about something as important as animal activism or climate change. So how do you handle, like, on day-to-day basis, this important and very tricky subject?
Yeah, I day by day, that's exactly it. Of course, things take, I get good breaks between articles. If I haven't published something for a week or two, then I kind of get more of a normal social media experience.
Right.
I get to do all my reading and my research. I get a lot of information via Twitter. That's where I do lot of my information. And connecting with editors is done a lot on Twitter. But then as soon as I put something out, I'm going to get a lot of stuff also, particularly on Twitter. I also have a Facebook page where I share all my stuff. But people who are there want to be there. So for the most part, it's encouraging people who are, you know, supportive of my work and say good things. But yeah, you get the hate sometimes.
Yeah.
I've definitely made a rule for myself not to read the comments section.
Very good.
On the actual publication.
Yeah.
I tend to only stick to the comment section on my own page where people are going to be positive.
Right. Yeah, I think it's so important because, you know, we read 100 comments, 99 are good, one is bad, and we just stick to the bad one.
It's true. There's so much psychology behind that.
And
you have to set limits to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm really into this handling social media because I think it's so dangerous and people get so involved in it. And
especially people in our world.
Yeah.
You can really get caught up with some really mean people who, as much as we want to defend what we believe to be right, they have the exact same amount of passion for the deer they just killed. And their right to do so.
Yeah.
And so as right as we think we are, so do they. And you can really get caught up in these conversations that can get pretty aggressive.
Yeah, and
online.
I think we have the online world made us forget how to discuss and argue.
No kidding.
Because...
No, you would never do this in person.
Yeah.
The way that you talk to people
online. I mean, so many people who are really, really friendly and polite in person.
Oh, yeah.
Can get really brutal online.
Very brave.
And I think that seeps and, like, bleeds into our social life in person, where we start, you know, I don't have your opinion, so I hate you.
Yeah.
So, and why is that? We have to relearn how to discuss properly.
Respectfully.
Respectfully. Yeah. And say, okay, let's agree to disagree. That's, by the way, one of the best
terms
English
ever.
Terms
oh,
ever.
Yeah.
Let's agree to disagree.
Yeah.
We have to have that in German.
Oh, it doesn't exist?
No.
Oh.
That's German. We always.
Yeah, exactly. There,
you know.
That concept doesn't exist.
No. No, but that's really interesting. So do you think that, because that's kind of my perception, that Twitter is much bigger in the US and Canada than it is in
Europe? I definitely get that for sure. There's really, I'm trying now to branch out more to European publications and learn European animal issues that I can write about. And I'm finding the lack of activity on Twitter making things a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Facebook's practically dead here.
Yeah.
I think Instagram is like it now.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of falling a little, but then they incorporated a lot of new features, like from the stories and IGTV and all that stuff, and now it's back up.
Yeah.
Because I'm not into that stuff, but because you have to be if you want to reach a lot of people these days.
Yes.
And it's an amazing tool.
And if you don't have it, it's like there's something wrong. You know, like if you're part of an organization or an event and you don't have a social media presence, no one's going to come.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and your following sometimes is like proportionally the amount of money you get paid
or
the events you can get to.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, but it's
self-promotion is a big part of this world, and it can feel kind of gross.
Yeah, absolutely. Man.
To do that, but it's the world we're living in now. And if really you keep at the heart of what you're doing, the message about animal rights and about vegan food, and really make sure that that stays as what you're really doing this
for.
Yeah,
it's not about me. It's about
exactly.
the message. Right
The ego has to take a step to the side, but that's almost impossible when this is the medium in which we're working. It's such an ego-driven medium.
Yeah.
So, you know, even me here talking to you right now, this was me doing some self-promotion.
Right. Yeah,
but that's the world we live in.
Yeah, it's really crazy. But I think we have to always talk about it, not to forget what this is. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. So, what are what's your current focus? What is the most disturbing or the most, the most uplifting thing that you wrote in the last couple of weeks? Where you think, okay, this is.
I think the one that just came out yesterday about the chickens. A lot of people don't know that chickens are the most abused land animal on earth. And any chance I get to write about chickens in particular, I'm really happy to do that. People are they just disregard them.
Yeah, it's all about beef, right?
And pigs, and that's necessary too, but people don't understand a lot that chickens don't even, they don't even fall under a lot of the animal welfare and cruelty laws in North America. They don't even count.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's definitely a big issue. As winter approaches, particularly in Canada, we have really a big issue with animal transport. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's activists protesting it here. But interestingly, we in Canada, we look to the European model of transporting animals
really?
To slaughter as the best.
Wow.
I mean, of course,
we
would say that none of it is right. But the limitations and the way that it's done in Germany and in Denmark, we see the trucks outfitted with the fans and the climate control. If you go to Canada, it can be a minus 40 day and you will see pigs in open-sided trucks traveling for up to 36 hours.
Wow.
That's the legal limit.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Wow.
And so that's something as winter approaches. I wrote about it last year for the Globe and Mail. And I will hopefully write about it again because it's still happening.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is weird. But I think that's so interesting that how the different international standards really influence each other and make us feel better about what we have.
You yes, know, it's true.
But we're the best. Yeah, but it's not good. You know.
And I think that's what really maybe stalled my journey towards veganism is because I was living in Germany and Denmark and places where everybody at home was saying, oh, it's so much better over there.
Right.
And I thought, oh, you know, and I'm going to this farm and I'm buying my chicken from this place where I see the chickens. They're not in a shed. They're not in these horrible circumstances.
It must be everywhere this way.
Yes, and how much better this is. And so that kind of stalled my journey because I thought this is good, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually I was like, well, no, I don't like this either. And none of it is good. Mm. And so here we are.
Wow. So what are your plans for the future? You're self-employed basically.
Yeah.
So plans for the future usually includes surviving.
Yes, just keep going, just keep on top of the news cycle, and whenever an opportunity comes where I can put a voice out in national media about animals or plant-based food, I will try and do it. And that's basically how I live every day.
Mm. I have a lot of listeners who want to join their ethical standpoints or their ethical views with their jobs more. So as a person who did that very successfully, do you have any kind of tips or any experiences where you think, oh, I wish I knew that when I started? Or
I think it's easier said than done, of course. Like you said, I'm self-employed. I do this freelance thing. That's a luxury when you want to live and work by your ethics. A lot of people do not have that opportunity. But I think for a lot of people who are starting out new as vegans, which there are a lot right now, don't be ashamed to stick to your guns. If you have to make a change in your work and you're able to do so, don't feel weird about it. You know, really stick to your guns. Even if you're the only one in the room, keep standing up for it and know that you're actually not alone and you're not weird and you can find something that's going to fit within your ethical standards, it's possible.
That's great. Yeah, it's just stick to it, right?
Yeah.
Just hang in there.
Just believe in it, and you're not weird. It's okay.
Yeah. The sad side to that is that we had a lot of restaurants opening in the last couple of years, which were vegan. And last year, lots of them closed because there were so many vegans who thought, okay, I'm just going to own a place, you know, I'm just going to open a place.
Mm-hmm.
But they were overwhelmed by like the bookkeeping, finances and all that stuff because they didn't learn it.
It's still a restaurant.
Yeah, it's still a restaurant
business. It's still a restaurant business.
And the business side, I think, overwhelms a lot of people and they didn't prepare enough. And I think that's something that a lot of people overlook when they say, okay, I'm going to do a vegan job now.
I think we have to look, you know, beyond just the typical vegan jobs and maybe find ways to veganize our jobs.
That's a very great point.
Yeah, instead of, you know, oh, I want to sell vegan food. I mean, have you ever been a restaurateur in the past? Like, why would you do that? You know, think of a way to veganize what you're good at.
Yeah.
There's definitely a way to do that in probably every aspect of the world. In every corner of a career, you could find a way to veganize your office or veganize your job site. You know, like my husband, he works in hockey and he's trying his best to have more vegan options available to himself and the team, because often the team will feed you after games and when you're on the road. So it can be hard, especially in a meat and potatoes type of culture like Germany.
Yeah. And in sports, especially. Right.
And so he's, you know, working. Exactly.
Yeah.
He's working hard to get more vegan options available in his job.
Right.
And thankfully he has some trainers and team doctors who are on his side and also encouraging that change. Yeah.
I imagine he gets them a lot of data that prove how healthy he lives now, right?
Yes, and I'm always helping.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And thankfully, these doctors, some of them that he works with already know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think you made a perfect point, just veganize your job.
Yeah, your corner of the earth.
Like, become, you know, if you're a lawyer, if you're a bus driver, a cook, anything, we can do so much and just inform people.
Yeah, like a lawyer, you don't even have to become an animal rights lawyer necessarily,
right.
But, you know, try and make your workplace, your office, the people you work with, maybe a more vegan-friendly environment. Just that.
Fantastic. Wow. So to close this up, what was like the number one thing or book or something that inspired you in the last couple of weeks?
I would say it is The End of Animal Farming by J.C. Reese. He is a writer that I've connected with on Twitter, and he writes a lot of opinion columns like I do, so we talk a lot about that. And he is really talking about the end of animal farming as we know it in the next less than 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And his book really details how that's going to be done, talking a lot also about cultured meat and the technologies mm-hmm. that are going to evolve to make that happen.
Fantastic. Favorite food right now?
Oh, gosh.
I know. That's why I say right now.
Okay, so Dr. Oetker, a non-vegan, I know, brand, makes a vegan creme fraiche. I cannot stop putting that on everything.
Really?
Because I have missed creme fraiche. That is such a very particular texture of a food. And I used to put on everything. And then when I discovered that there was a vegan version here, oh, my God, yeah, creme fraiche.
Really unusual. Perfect.
That's me.
Where can we find your work? Where can we find you online?
So I have a Facebook page, writer and animal advocate Jessica L. Scott Reed. And on Twitter, I think it's Jess L. Reed or something. Just look up Jessica Scott Reed on Twitter and there I'll be. And I share all my work there.
Cool. And we'll obviously put everything as a link very neat in the show notes.
Super.
Thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
If you're stoked and motivated right now to start your own writing career and you seek inspiration, or you just want to know more about Jessica's work, which is, quite frankly, very fascinating, take a look at the show notes. I personally love to learn new perspectives from around the world. I sometimes tend to get so focused on the issues that I have right before me and whom I can reach at my doorstep, and that I kind of forget about the global perspective, which is why I became vegan, like the global perspective. But sometimes I kind of forget that. But look at what Jessica is accomplishing, reaching people across the globe. And I was shocked to hear about the state of law concerning the chickens in the US and the transportation in Canada. I think that is shocking. And I think we need to learn all these things to create the bigger picture in our head. And that gives us all the more reason to stick together and work for a better world, right? Right. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to write me your questions and thoughts, as always, to lars@veggieworld.de for Deutschland, or to my Instagram at lars.walter.official. That's Walter with TH, Lars Walter Official. And of course, visit our website, veggieworld.com. Also, if you like to stay up to date, try, or just do, because there is no try, to give us a follow on the grams, as they say, at Official Veggie World. Thank you so much for tuning in. Next week, we'll switch back into German, yes, and talk with Sascha from Think Vegan about reaching as many people as you can. I'm looking forward to see you there. Have a lovely week. Thank you so much, and bye-bye.